Welcome to the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. I'm Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today, we'll discuss a new study by Coates et al. Titled Soluble Guanylate Cyclase Stimulation in Late Gestation Does Not Mitigate Asymmetric IUGR or Cardiovascular Risk Induced by Placental Ischemia in the Rat. This article was published March 19, 2021. Joining us today are host Stella Goulopoulou, authors Barbara Alexander and Laura Coates, and expert Chris Bannock. Let's get started.
We do know that impaired fetal development is associated with long-term adverse health consequences for the offspring. As such, children affected by intrauterine growth restriction during pregnancy are at high risk of developing cardiovascular disease later in life. Throughout this podcast, I will refer to intrauterine growth restriction as IUGR. IUGR is a pathological pregnancy condition during which the growing baby does not reach its biological potential for growth and development in utero. IUGR can develop as an independent condition, or it could be secondary to other gestational complications such as preeclampsia. Impairment of the nitric oxide signaling pathway is associated with placental dysfunction and poor fetal development. And on this premise, the study by Laura Coates and colleagues investigated the effects of perinatal treatment that specifically targeted the nitric oxide pathway on blood pressure and cardiac function of the offspring in an experimental model of placental ischemia and signs of preeclampsia. Barbara, what was your motivation for doing this study?
Thank you, Stella. Well, one of our collaborators, Dr. Joey Granger, and his postdoctoral fellow at the time, Dr. Bakrania, who's also a co-author on this study, they reported that maternal administration of a soluble guanylate cyclase stimulator during pregnancy in a rat model of preeclampsia abolishes the increase in blood pressure that is induced by placental ischemia in this model. Now, several studies demonstrate that soluble guanylate cyclase is reduced in women with preeclampsia, and a previous study from our laboratory demonstrated there's also a reduction in this rat model of preeclampsia. Now, preeclampsia is the leading cause of IUGR in the Western world, and our laboratory uses this rat model to study IUGR in the offspring. We have spent a number of years investigating the mechanisms by which fetal growth restriction induced in this model of preeclampsia contributes, as Stella mentioned, to the developmental origins of cardiovascular disease. However, since a study by Granger and colleagues showed that stimulation of soluble guanylate cyclase was associated with a reduction in maternal blood pressure, suggesting that a deficiency in soluble guanylate cyclase contributes to the etiology of hypertension in preeclampsia, my laboratory investigated to see if perhaps a deficiency in soluble guanylate cyclase also contributes to the etiology of IUGR.
Thank you, Barbara. This is very exciting. Laura, can you please give us a summary of this paper and its main highlights?
Yes, thank you. So this study tested the hypothesis that stimulation of the soluble guanylate cyclase, cyclic guanosine monophosphate pathway in late gestation, meaning gestation day 20 to birth in the rodent, improves asymmetrical growth restriction and mitigates cardiovascular risk in the male offspring. So our study reflected findings from the Granger lab, as Dr. Alexander mentioned, in which stimulation of SGC pathway improves uteroplacental blood flow in the rump dams. Now, previously, our lab found that improvement in blood flow was associated with improved fetal weight and asymmetrical growth at gestation day 20, so an earlier time point in gestation. Yet, in our current study, in which we stimulated the SGC pathway from gestation day 20 to birth, or late gestation, we found that at birth, neither birth weight nor asymmetrical growth were improved, and the intrauterine growth restriction in the offspring was associated with reduction in offspring survival, and reduced survival was exacerbated with treatment. This reduction in birth weight and asymmetrical growth was associated with cardiovascular risk in male offspring at 4 months of age. So these findings suggest that the SGC pathway is not associated with the pathogenesis of intrauterine growth restriction in late gestation, again, meaning gestation day 20 to birth, and thus this pathway does not improve cardiovascular risk in the growth-restricted offspring.
Laura, could you please tell us more about the experimental model, design, and treatment you used in this study?
Yes. So this model has been extremely well characterized, not just at UMMC, but also like throughout the nation and the world. And this is the reduced uterine perfusion pressure model of placental ischemia. And it's specifically done in rodents, and we use the Sprague Dolly Brat. So with this model, placental ischemia, it's accomplished by clamping the abdominal aorta and the two uterine arteries with silver clamps. And that is done at gestation day 14 in the rodent. So normal gestation in rodents is about 21 days. So we're clamping those arteries at gestation day 14. And so with this procedure, we are able to reduce uteroplacental blood flow by about 40%. And so that mimics human preeclampsia and that reduction in uteroplacental blood flow noted in women with PE. This model shares many characteristics of women with PE, such as elevated maternal blood pressure, an increase in S-flit, proteinuria, endothelin 1, and intrauterine growth restriction in the offspring. And the lab of Dr. Joey Granger has actually shown that if you provide a maternal therapeutic, such as the soluble guanylate stimulator, that can reduce that increase in maternal blood pressure, and that can attenuate fetal growth restriction. And so we chose to also utilize this drug known as riociguat that targeted the SGC pathway in order to determine if that improvement in blood flow can mitigate intrauterine growth restriction. And so we were hoping to see if stimulation of the SGC pathway actually improves, as I said, blood flow to the uteroplacental unit, thus improving the intrauterine growth restriction and cardiovascular risk.
So Barbara, as Laura just described, and you and Laura described in the paper and in your previous studies, dysfunction of the soluble guanylate cyclase cGMP pathway is associated with IUGR. However, the findings of this study showed that soluble guanylate cyclase stimulation during pregnancy has adverse effects on offspring cardiovascular health. Were you surprised with these findings and how we should interpret them?
Yes and no, actually. Soluble guanylate stimulators, which are a class of drugs used for pulmonary hypertension, are contraindicated during pregnancy. Yet the specifics related to their teratogenic effects have not been reported. Therefore, we did not know whether the adverse effects of the soluble guanylate cyclase stimulator was to act directly to impair fetal development, or if the adverse effects are secondary due to its vasodilatory actions, actions that decrease maternal blood pressure, perhaps resulting in a reduction in perfusion or blood flow to the fetus, and hence impairing fetal growth indirectly. But you have to remember that it's hypothesized that the increase in blood pressure that occurs in women with preeclampsia is thought to be a compensatory response that occurs in response to placental ischemia to try to improve perfusion or blood flow to the fetus. But as Laura stated earlier in this podcast, we actually saw improvement in blood flow to the fetus in our treated dams. Moreover, we have a previous study that showed that fetal growth was actually improved in these treated pregnant rats in late gestation or at gestational day 20. So therefore, we were very surprised that just a few extra days of exposure during gestation to this drug resulted in a significant reduction in weight that was actually asymmetric, which is the type of growth restriction that's expected to result in increased cardiovascular risk. Moreover, we also found that in those pups that survived till birth, viability after birth was also significantly reduced. So in our study too, another finding that was really quite unexpected was the effect of this soluble guanylate cyclase stimulator on gestational length. Now, our length of gestation was extended by about 24 hours. Now, 24 hours may not appear to be a really clinically relevant period of time, but relative to the human, this would actually translate to in about 2 weeks.
So, Chris, what you would consider were the main highlights of this study?
Thank you, Stella. The clinical relevance of this is quite interesting. So their previous study that was published in AJP Regulatory Physiology just in February really showed very positive effects of this soluble guanylate cyclase. And so they looked at the very end of gestation, just in the fetal growth, and it was all very positive. So, yes, it's very surprising to see that the fetal growth restriction that is attenuated with this when it's seen at gestational day 20 is then programming that fetus to become hypertensive at 4 months of age in adulthood, it is quite surprising. And so it really highlights the crucial importance of treatment and intervention late in gestation when the organ development is most rapid, specifically kidney and lung development.
These are some great points, Chris, especially when we talk about timing of intervention during pregnancy and what you highlighted about the organ development. I think is the key in a lot of the treatments we employ in experimental studies in clinical studies for that matter. So, Laura, in this study, you used male offspring. What would you expect to see in female offspring? And are you planning to do these studies?
So Dr. Alexander's lab has shown that the growth-restricted male offspring have increased blood pressure by 12 weeks of age compared to control counterparts. Yet in the females, they tend to be protected from this elevated blood pressure until about 1 year of age. And at that point, that is the age at which these rodent females cease to cycle. And so her lab has shown that the estrogen, they believe, is protective and reduces the risk of elevated blood pressure. How targeting the SGC pathway during gestation affects the female offspring after 12 months of age is not yet known. But we are not planning to do these studies since the males did not show an improvement. And specifically, I mean, the males that were from mothers that were treated with the SGC stimulator. And so with that being said, there's just not really a reason to look at females since we do not expect an improvement in cardiovascular risk.
As Laura stated, we're not going to pursue further studies using this particular drug. However, our lab is now starting to actually investigate other targets that may be contributory to IUGR as perhaps potential therapeutics for use in treating, hopefully at one point, women with preeclampsia that would provide benefit to the mother without inflicting further harm on the offspring.
And you're right, Barbara, this is always a challenge. You treat two patients, so you want to improve the one without harming the other. So this, I'm looking forward to these studies. So I have another question for Laura. You focus very much on cardiac function in this study, and of course, there are a difference in blood pressure as well. And have you looked at all in the vasculature of those pups when they're adults?
The only things that we did were the echocardiogram measurements that I showed. So we did not do any vasodilatory responses in the offspring.
I've actually not done vascular studies, Stella, in my offspring, but Ralph Khalil, when he was here, did look at vascular responses, and also Cindy Anderson, using the same animal model, has also looked at vascular responses in the male and the female offspring. And we do see a lot of, in particular, nitric oxide or endothelium-dependent alterations in the vascular responses in these offspring.
Which is, of course, not surprising. So thank you, Barbara. So Barbara and Laura, are there additional aspects of this study that you would like to discuss?
Yes. So we've been asked the question before, why did you choose to use SGC stimulator? Because it is known to be contraindicated during pregnancy. So I just want to highlight that this study was not investigating the role of SGC stimulator as a potential therapeutic. We were just mainly utilizing this drug that targeted the SGC pathway in order to investigate the importance of the nitric oxide soluble guanylate cyclase cyclic GMP pathway in the pathogenesis of intrauterine growth restriction. So this study emphasizes the importance of preclinical studies in order to test physiological mechanisms involved in the pathogenesis of disease states.
And again, I would just like to highlight that really this study does emphasize the importance of preclinical studies, because if you remember, this study was based on a previous study by Grandjean and colleagues who showed benefit in the mother on blood pressure. Yet when this drug was continued all the way through birth, clearly this study suggested that perhaps benefit did not extend to the developing fetus.
Can I jump in? Do you expect the effects of soluble guanylate cyclase to be positive if treatment is ended on gestational day 20?
That is a really good question. And again, it kind of goes back to the fact that there's a black box warning on this drug for use in women that are pregnant. Yet we don't know why that black box is there. Our offspring They were still asymmetrically growth restricted. And to be honest, viability, survival within that first 48 hours was actually very harmful. So if we had stopped this at gestational day 20, would we have seen something different? I don't know. That's an interesting point. And it really goes back again to emphasizing how important preclinical trials are to really look at maternal therapeutics and the timing. You talked about the timing of the programming effects of exposure to an adverse environment. I think this is actually going to translate into the importance of timing in preclinical studies in terms of maternal administration of therapeutics that might be identified as potential agents for treatment of preeclampsia and IUGR. Thank you, Chris.
And not only the timing aspect of it, but really it just highlights maybe a bigger issue in the area. And that is many of these studies end prior to the delivery of the fetus. And they assess either the maternal health or the fetal health or development and whether it's positive or negative. And you could easily be tricked by the studies before delivery where they ended at gestational day 20 and they had very positive effects on both the maternal and fetal health. But the development or fetal programming stage that your work has consistently been showing is that fetal programming for later on cardiovascular disease development is also a very crucial follow-up study that needs to be done in these types of studies.
I agree. Thank you. That's a great point.
This is indeed a great point, and I love that question because it leads very nicely to my next question for Chris. So as we know, a good study such as the one by Laura and Barbara here, address a significant topic, uses the right methodology to test the hypothesis, but also generates additional questions. And you already described the question with regards to the timing. Chris, what other questions do you think this study has generated? So in other words, what should be the next steps?
Well, as I brought up earlier, I think perhaps playing with the timing of this SGC treatment and stopping it at gestational day 20 and then allowing them to be delivered to see if they have either the same increased risk of hypertension later on in life or not, that would begin to address the timing issue.
Laura and Barbara, are there any kind of organic steps after what you did now that you already have plans to do?
You know, it's interesting. It kind of goes back to what Chris talked about, how so many studies, preclinical studies, end at gestational day 19 or gestational day 20, show benefit in the mother and make an assumption about how there's benefit in the offspring. And so, you know, this pathway has been studied at every stage. If you give L-arginine to increase nitric oxide production, it's beneficial in preclinical models. It's beneficial in women with preeclampsia, but it's short term. Its effects are only beneficial for about a week, which is not long enough to get a woman all the way through her entire length of pregnancy. Antioxidants also are a component of this nitric oxide pathway. There have actually been some clinical studies that have shown that antioxidants are associated with increased IUGR. So I think people have been trying to pick apart every component of this nitric oxide, soluble guanylate cyclase, cyclic GMP pathway to see, because it would make sense, since it's a vasodilatory pathway, to be beneficial in women with preeclampsia. And despite what the preclinical studies have shown as benefit or not, it just really has not been able to translate into the clinical arena. And so at this point, I really don't know where the field's going to be in this area, except to maybe start trying to investigate different pathways. It really highlights, and I think this paper, along with the whole body of both preclinical and clinical studies, highlights how tricky treating preeclampsia is. You have to recognize that despite over 50 years of research, the only treatment for preeclampsia right now is delivery of the baby. And that is not acceptable either, because that too can result in the IUGR baby.
I would like to thank Barbara Alexander and Laura Coates for joining us today for this AJP Heart and Circulatory podcast and for publishing their work in the journal. Also, I'd like to thank Chris Panik for sharing his expertise here with us today. Cara, back to you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the AJP Heart and Circ podcast. Our theme music was written and performed by Ray Mitchell. Catch the latest episodes of our podcast at physiology.org/journal/AJP Heart.